says she's on the call.
Now she is.
Hi.
Oh, now you're. Oh, okay. God, it's like, what? It's like a horror movie. She's in the house the whole time.
It's coming from inside the house.
So hold on. Just getting a couple of things ready. Tanya, how do I sound to you?
Fine.
All right. Groovy. Any questions or anything that you guys want to talk about before we jump into it?
What are we doing today? I saw 1917. I'm asking to clarify. I knew he was gonna fucking laugh. I saw 1917 last night, but I saw both of you also saw Bad Boys, and I didn't know if you had either. If you had seen 1917, then I didn't see Bad Boys.
Oh,
that is
no.
What I'm clarifying.
We both saw 1917. I didn't see Bad Boys.
Wait, say you're talking together. One person. Nick.
We both saw 1917, and only he saw Bad Boys.
Okay.
I just watched.
He was raising his hand. You didn't see.
I did not.
No. Yeah. So I did see both. And to be quite honest, I could really talk about Bad Boys for an hour.
Hey! Oh, shit. Oh. Come on, man.
You can get that buffed out.
No, you can get that buffed out.
Remember, knock and talk.
Yeah, knock, knock. Miami PD, get down! What the hell happened to knock and talk?
Hands behind your head right now.
I got this.
I'm gonna penetrate this man's soul with my heart.
What?
Watch and learn.
Sir, I realize that you're scared. You know, sometimes fear.
How deep you think you got in his soul?
I'm done, Mike. I'm retiring.
Uh-oh, here we go again.
You want your legacy to be muscle shirts and body counts?
Look at this mess, it's carnage.
I didn't do all this.
You didn't shoot anybody?
Well, come on, Cap, you know I shot some people.
Yeah.
Me! Fuck! Fuck! Fuck!
In these streets, I never trusted anybody but me. I'm asking you, man. Bad Boys.
One last time.
One last time.
Shot.
I was surprised.
I'm surprised.
They gave it, like, solid matinees, which is, that's good.
Yes. It is that good.
That's amazing.
So it is very weird to me how good this movie was. And I think part of it was I walked into it having seen Gemini Man and was like, it was fine. So like you've got Elizabeth Winstead and Will Smith and Ang Lee and Clive Owen. And you walk out of that movie and you're like, yeah, that was a movie, I guess. And Benedict Wong. It's like, I don't understand how that wasn't a better movie. You had two Will Smiths. And it just wasn't, great. That's right. Maybe that's it. Is the ratio of Smiths. It was too many. So that's why After Earth was terrible, because you had too many Smiths. Gemini Man is terrible because he had too many Smiths. So the right
He's
ratio
like concentrated vanilla. Right. You have to cut him with like other stuff. It has to be like one part Smith, one part Lawrence, or one part Smith, one part insert other black comedian. It can't just be all Smith all the time because the flavor's too strong. The flavor's too strong and it overpowers your pie.
Is that why him and Tommy Lee Jones work so well together?
Maybe. Yeah.
Not vanilla down by a lot.
He's half and no, not vanilla. He's half and half. Why do I keep comparing him to white creamy things?
That's what I was thinking.
That's chocolate.
Vanilla.
He's regular. He's dark chocolate.
He's dark chocolate. You got to put him with some nuts or some milk. Yeah.
Make some milk chocolate. Maybe a Mr. Goodbar.
Nougat.
Mix it in there. You
got
to stew. But yeah, I could, no kidding. Like, and I'll just roll into it now. Like, I walked into this movie with relatively low expectations, and it was everything I would want it to be. Like if somebody put a gun to my head and they're like, you will make a sequel to this movie that you thought was kind of meh. Cause I really liked the first one. The second one, not so much. It's fine. it's just not, I don't think it's as good as the first one. The first one's still dated, but as a movie of its time, I thought it was good. The second one, you can tell, like Nick and I were talking about before, they gave just Michael Bay way too much money and no one told him no. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's two completely different directors. So they did the Russo brothers thing and they got some completely unknown guys. Like I'd never heard of them before. So I'm going to probably mess up somebody's name, but Adil El Arbi and Bilal Fallah. They're out of Belgium. Never heard of these guys before. They mostly did television, some acting, and it does not show from watching this movie at all that they just absolutely, they know what they're doing. More so than Michael Bay, and which is weird to say. It's like he, when you watch a Michael Bay movie, there are three things you know that you're going to see. Something misogynistic, something racist, and something nationalist. Right? It's just like, that's his thing.
What you about mix explosions? Those things you together. Forgot explosions.
I'm sorry. An explosion. In my head, so bam. Big explosion. I'm sorry. So four. That's your bam. And these guys did a better job of letting the jokes that needed to hang in the air, like letting the serious moments be serious when they needed to be, and even cutting the serious moments with an appropriate joke. Like their timing was really, really good. And I went to see this with two Germans, and they had only, one of them hadn't seen either of them, and he really liked this. The other guy had seen both of them like 7 years ago, and he really liked this. And part of the question I asked them, I was like, okay, so for you all, because I was kind of questioning myself, did you like this movie because of nostalgia? And the guy from 7 years ago said, in the first couple of minutes, yes. But then the rest of the movie just ramps up and just takes you. And then the other guy says, like, I don't have a basis for comparison for nostalgia. I just really like this movie. And I'm just, I'm shocked. I really was shocked. And I walked out of this movie super geeked. It has a 75% on Rotten Tomatoes from the critics, but a 90.
Not saying not bad. So it's fresh in both. It sounds like you're about to say it's fresh for critics and audience.
So from the critics, yes, 75%, 97% from the audience.
Dang, they like them bad boys.
Which fucking blows me away. Like, as much, like, 1917 is an Oscar-nominated film, and it only got an 89% from the audience. And, you know, say what you will about what critics and audiences and award shows think. That's still a shockingly high disparity, because I think 1917 is a generally well-liked film.
Yeah. Not everybody likes war, but everybody likes to laugh.
That's true too. But at least in my opinion, so one reason why I generally don't go see comedies is because it is so subjective.
Yep.
But the thing that helped was I've seen two of these before. And so knowing Lawrence and knowing Smith, I kind of knew what I was in for. But this movie, like, it was really good. I would recommend this to anybody who liked the first two, like either combination of the first two. If you like the first one and not the second one, if you like the second one and not the first one, like Nick was kind of alluding to, he said he liked the second one more. I still think this is great. Okay. I didn't know that's okay. See how your mileage varies.
The Ku Klux Klan, that's when Martin Lawrence gets shot in the ass.
It's pretty good.
Will Smith like shoots him through the ass to shoot the guy behind him.
Yeah. And what I really liked about this one is they had some really good callbacks. So that scene that you're referencing, they talk about that. But the way that they do it is in a very like blink and you'll miss it type thing. So they're sitting at a bar and talking, and he says, Martin Lawrence says something like, you know, I was running and you were behind me. Your old slow ass couldn't keep up. And the only thing you could see was my one good ass cheek. And he's talking about that time he got shot in the ass 17 years ago. And like, if you haven't seen the movies and haven't like, just remember, you might forget that or not even know it. But there were lots of little things like that, that they just kept bringing up. I loved it. And So yeah, do y'all have any questions before I actually go into spoilers about it?
No.
No. No. Okay. So the story is very cool. So they do like the Lethal Weapon 4 thing, which is like basically, you know, we're too old for this shit. But it's really Martin Lawrence who was saying that, like, we're too old for this. And Will Smith is like, no, I'm still good. I got like another 25 years left in me. And the scene from the trailer where Martin Lawrence says to him, you know, do you want your legacy to be body counts and muscle shirts? He's like, you don't have kids. You don't have a wife. You're like, you don't have anything. And Will Smith is like, I'm fine. I'm good. And what you see throughout this movie is they really lean into them being older guys trying to hang on to what they have. And for Martin Lawrence, he's good getting out of the game. And what I liked about the story was you see kind of what makes Will Smith's character tick, because they reveal basically why he is the way he is. And the story is that there is the wife of a cartel leader. He gets broken out of jail and she sends her son to go kill this guy, it's the typical cop drama where what they did was, hey, you were involved in the case that broke up my family or whatever. You guys know the story that I'm talking about that they usually do?
Yeah.
Okay, so like the DA, you were the prosecutor on this one case and you were the cop that arrested me. And so they go one by one and start killing those people. So that's what this story is. It's the very basic plot. And what it turns out is that Will Smith is, unbeknownst to him or the kid that was sent to kill him, he is the father of this kid. And the way the story plays out is that Captain Howard, the guy played by Joey Pants, pulled Will Smith out of the academy and sent him undercover. And he became the driver for the cartel leader. I'm sorry, cartel leader's wife. And so he's driving her around. And in the course of that, they fall in love and he ends up getting her pregnant and he doesn't know it. And Martin Lawrence says, well, like, so you sent the woman that you love to jail? And he says, you know, she was a stone cold killer and I chose the badge. And he says that that's the only time that he's ever been in love. And it fucked him up.
Got that Casino Royale origin.
Yeah. So it's that plus a little bit of Rise of Skywalker, right? Like you just had this kid that came out of nowhere. And they tied it all up and gave it very real emotional stakes. And what Will Smith says about her is he said, you know, she's the one that taught me how to walk it, how to talk the game. And like, she's the one that brought me into everything. And Martin Lawrence says, so that's the reason why you dress like a drug dealer. And like, so that's kind of it. Like it's almost his origin story to understand why he is the way he is. And you really enjoy that. And he has to kind of contend with his own mortality and his legacy and having to fight his own son. And I was there for it. I was super into it.
Like a better version of Gemini Man.
It was so
fighting his son instead of a clone or whatever.
Yeah. It was that. You're absolutely right. It was a better version of that. And some of the emotional stuff that they did in this movie just genuinely got me. Like in the first 7 minutes of the movie, Will Smith gets shot 3 times by his son and he codes out. Like he basically dies. And Martin Lawrence is in a hospital crying and he says to God, he's like, hey, you know, I know I haven't been in church in a long time. I think the last time I was in church was at Easter time. And he said, the truth is I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed of all the stuff that I have to do out there on the streets and all the violence that I do. And I'm afraid and ashamed to come to church. But if he said, Mike doesn't have kids or wife or anything in his life, but I swear to you, God, that if you give him another chance, I will bring no more violence into this world. And they have like this really touching scene where he's like wiping drool off his face. Will Smith's beard had been turning gray and he'd been coloring it. But he wouldn't admit it to Martin Lawrence, and Martin Lawrence knew it. So while he's basically in a coma, Martin Lawrence is like coloring his beard. And it's like, it's super touching.
Touching way, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny, you laugh, but you also get the feels from it, because he genuinely cares about this guy. And when they when he recovers, he's ready to get back to it, and he wants to find the guy that shot him. And Martin Lawrence tells him no, and he goes, "Let me see if I get this straight. Somebody shoots me, almost kills me, and you're out. Like, you just don't give a fuck. You don't give a shit about me." And because Martin Lawrence wants, he dropped his retirement papers, and he goes, "Hold on, you don't understand. You coded out on that table. You died 3 times. That's bad boys for life. Your life ended. And, you know, I wiped the drool off your face. I watched you die. I'm done. I'm out." And that's how they left it for a little bit. And it was a good emotional story. Had good action, had like everything that you would want it to have. So I really like this movie.
Yeah, there's no way Michael Bay would have made that script.
No, not at all. And to that point, Nick, so this is the story that Joe Carnahan was going to do when he was slated to direct this movie. They actually kept it. And I don't know if you guys know the other stuff that he's done aside from like A-Team. He did The Gray, which I thought also had really good emotional stakes. I really like that movie. And so you can kind of see, you know, that higher level thinking in this movie. And it's just fun. It's a fun movie. It's a way deeper movie than you would think that it should be. And it had, it's probably one of my favorite movies of its kind, like a buddy cop movie. So yeah. Dang.
I'll have to watch the second one and then get on the third one.
Yeah. And the thing that's funny is, so
I love this genre
here. It's a good genre, and this one definitely is up there. Like, if you think of like what is your favorite Lethal Weapon, this is probably up there. And so like there's a funny, damn it, you haven't seen it all of it, Nick. Did you see the second one, Tanya?
Yeah, years ago, but I couldn't tell you anything from it.
Well, do you remember the scene where the kid came to pick up the daughter?
No.
Okay. So there's a scene from the second one, and Nick, you'll see what I'm talking about, where it's a great scene because it is completely unscripted, and it's when Martin Lawrence and Will Smith got into a fight about something, and in the middle of their fight, this kid comes to pick up Martin Lawrence's daughter for a date, and Martin Lawrence opens up the door, and what is great about the scene was the kid that they got to play this character, Reggie, everyone had told him, "Hey, listen, don't look at Will Smith or Martin Lawrence in the eye. They don't like to be talked to. Just stay away from him if you see him on set." So his reaction to the two of them yelling at him in this scene is 100% genuine. And so when he opens up the door and he's like, "Who the fuck are you?" He goes, I'm Reggie, sir. I'm here to pick up your daughter." He's like, "The fuck you are?" And like he starts yelling and screaming at him, doing like the father thing. And then Will Smith pretends to be drunk. And he's like, "Who the fuck is that?" And he said, "Yeah, this is Reggie. He thinks he's coming to pick up Megan." He's like, "The fuck he is." And they just do this like screaming, yelling and cursing at him. And he sounds like he's going to piss himself. And the last killing statement out of that scene is Will Smith says, "Reggie, have you ever fucked a man?" And Reggie's like, "No." And Will Smith says, "Would you like to?" And like, it's just, it's so weird and out of character for what you generally see from them on screen. And so I say that to say, like, the opening scene of this movie, Reggie has a baby with Megan. And people who have seen both, like the second movie, just start busting up laughing as soon as they showed him. Because everybody remembered having seen it. Because he's very recognizable. And it's weird because he doesn't look that different, even though it's 17 years ago. But it does a really good job with callbacks. Even Michael Bay is in the movie. He has a cameo. He is the MC of the wedding between Reggie and Megan. And it's just fun. I don't know that I could say enough good things about this movie. I'm hoping I'm not overselling it. But the last thing that I would say is they did a really good job turning very goofy things. And I love when you can take something that's very silly and goofy and turn it into something serious that means something. So there's a scene where Will Smith goes to a witness's house. They need to get some information from somebody, and Martin Lawrence is with him, and Martin Lawrence is trying to do like, no, let's just talk to him. Will Smith is like, fuck that. And he kicks in the door, and the guy is high on coke and he's punching a punching bag. And Martin Lawrence says, you know, I'm going to go talk to him. And Will Smith, he says, you're going to do what? And this is like this huge coked out dude. And Will Smith says, what are you doing? And he says, I'm going to try and penetrate his soul with my heart. And he's like, okay. And he walks up to the guy, and the guy is so high on drugs. But you know how some people can be like high and doing something different and not paying attention to you, but then they talk to you while they're doing something else. So he's punching his punching bag and he's talking to himself. And as Martin Lawrence gets closer, he says, don't you come over here. And Will Smith says, I don't think you should go over there. And as soon as Martin Lawrence tries to talk to him, the guy turns around and punches him in the face. And Will Smith says, you're right. He's like, no, I got this. I got this. So the guy gets up, and Martin Lawrence gets up, tries to talk to the guy again. And the guy punches him in the other cheek. And he goes, so how to turn in the other cheek goes. And Martin Lawrence said, you know, I think you should handle this. And Will Smith like beats the shit out of the guy, or is about to, and then something else happens. The point is, at the end of the movie, he has to fight his son. And his son, like, he tries to tell him that I'm your father, and he doesn't want to hear it. And it's very like Star Wars-esque. He's like, you know, I'm your father. He's like, bullshit, you're not my father, blah, blah, blah. And he starts beating him up, and Will Smith stops fighting him. And this guy is like beating the shit out of him, about to like basically kill him. And Martin Lawrence tries to help him, but he can never fight in this series. And the guy just like throws him on the ground. And he's on the ground with Will Smith, and Martin Lawrence is like, what are you doing? He is going to kill you. And Will Smith is laying there. He's all bloody. He's hurt. And he says, I'm trying to penetrate his soul with my heart. And it just, yeah, you're like, oh. And it's just, it was really good.
It's also very Winter Soldier. It makes me think of Winter Soldier immediately. Like, if he tells his son, I'm with you till the end of the road, man. The end of the line.
Yeah. It was that scene. It was, you know, something out of Star Wars where he's like, I'm your father. So the kid was basically Vader. And his mom was Palpatine, and, you know, just reverse roles for father and son.
I'm going to start calling your comedy movie review sap takes, because you managed to find, you did this with Enter the Florpus too. Like, you found the single most heartfelt part when they had that father son moment and Enter the fucking Florpus. And I was like, you know, you're talking about Invader Zim, right? Like, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm glad that they, you know, gave some extra emotionality and some level to something that could have been a very superficial comedy, but this doesn't sound like a comedy review. It sounds like sap takes. So I'm going to start calling your take sap takes, because that's what it is.
It's weird because it's the scenes are both. Like, you see Reggie and you laugh, but it's also sappy because of the scene that happens. Like, so what he says is, when they go into the hospital room when the baby's born, you don't see him. And what the way that the reveal that he's in the room is, they hand the baby to Martin Lawrence and he's holding the baby, and his wife says, this is Marcus something. I forgot what the rest of his name was. And he goes, but that's my name. And then this voice from off screen goes, you know, we thought it would be a great tribute to you. And then the camera turns and it's him. And so you get like, it's funny, but it's also heartfelt at the same time. You're right. But I just love that they were able to combine both of those things in this movie. So I highly recommend it. I can't say enough good things about it.
Yeah, I watched the first one. It was like, it was cool. It was very, I wasn't surprised how much it was like Lethal Weapon. Like, a lot of the stuff, the characterizations, you know, the family, the not family, the womanizer who's a little crazy, who wants to kill lots of people, and who could chase down a car.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, we're just switching out racist for Scientologist right here. We're getting the full package.
Yeah, but, basically.
Yeah, and I also watched the Honest trailer for both of them this week or last week.
Oh, I should have done that. Is it good?
Yeah. It points out all the stuff that are bayisms, all the sexism, fart jokes, butt jokes, can't get erection jokes, can't get laid jokes.
Yep. Yeah, he's a child. He's a big child. Like, I like a lot of things about his movies, but he's a big child.
Now, who did this one?
It's the two guys whose names I butchered. So it's Adil El Arbi and Bilal Fallah. So they got two dudes who are basically out of nowhere to do this movie. So they're from Belgium. And if you look at their Wikipedia page, they haven't really done anything. Nothing that I could name that you have ever heard of. Nothing I'd heard of when I read it.
Nice debut, I guess.
Yeah. So they, and so to that point about a nice debut, this was a $90 million movie, and they think that it might make close to 60 or maybe more than $60 million this weekend. And it's got an A cinema score.
I guess I was wrong when I said that it looks like Rush Hour 3.
Oh, I
remember I like wrote that. I'm like, it looks like Rush Hour 3 compared to the first two, but it must just be the change in look because no Michael Bay. Martin Lawrence got fatter, just like Chris Tucker gets fatter.
I did not think that this would be a good movie. I thought it would be fine, especially because I was really looking forward to Joe Carnahan directing this. And when he dropped out, I was like, fuck, so is this even going to be good? Because I had, again, never heard of these directors, but I guess people will surprise you.
I guess they're doing Beverly Hills Cop 4. So that gives me some interest and some intrigue in seeing that, because I wasn't interested in that either.
Yeah, I'm hoping for the same loving treatment of because it was apparent from the opening credits that they were fans of this, because one of the things I didn't like about the second was I really liked the theme music from the first one. They have like this very simple dun 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 dun, and that is absent from the second one. They replaced it with the P. Diddy song, Shake Your Tail Feather, and it was kind of annoying because they played it so many times. But in this one, like, that was the opening music, and they just knew how to synthesize basically everything from the first two movies. So to that point, yeah, I'm really looking forward to Beverly Hills Cop 4 based on that. And now they're going to make another one of these. So they've announced that they're going to make Bad Boys 4. I'm hoping it doesn't take either 7 or 17 years to make like it has with these two sequels, because they end this one on a Fast and Furious-esque cliffhanger.
God, 17 that, years, that would be Bad Boys Expendables.
Yeah, man. So what they did in this one was they introduced a new team. And so, like you just said, Expendables, it kind of is that in this. So you've got the old experience. So the last Expendables, Expendables 3, where in this one, you've got these older experienced guys who everyone else regards as basically legends. And then these young millennials who have a different way of doing things, and they clash, but then they got to work together to solve the issue. And the reason why I say that this reminds me of Fast and Furious, or even, Fast and Furious, is because at the end of the movie, so he doesn't kill his son. And what Will Smith says to him is, he's like, listen, I can't say that everything is going to be all right because of the stuff that you've done, but I'm going to be there for you. And he like nods, and then the movie looks like it's going to end. And I was thinking in my head, like, you know what would have been great is if I got a like just one more scene with the two of them. And then they do it. They cut to black, and then he goes up to his son who's in jail, and he says, you know, you doing all right? And he goes, you know, I'm paying my I forgot what he said. He's like, my penance or something like that. And he goes, and it's pretty heavy. And he goes, how would you like to pay down some of that debt? And he's like, yeah. And so it looks like basically they're going to almost like Suicide Squad style. They're going to let him out to help out on missions.
Only if Will Smith gets to say, is this some sort of Suicide Squad or something?
Oh, And then the last substantive thing to have about this movie was, this is the only time watching a movie that I have ever involuntarily yelled during a movie. And it was, so Joey Pants is talking to Will Smith. And you, when I say Joey Pants, you guys know who I'm talking about, right?
Joe Pantoliano.
Okay. He has this moment with Will Smith where he tells him this very touching story. And it's, at first it doesn't sound like it's going to be. He just sounds like he's mumbling and bumbling, trying to get through this story. And he basically says, so Will Smith is consumed by his anger and like his hate. He just wants to get back on the street, find the person that, you know, did this to him. And he's doing reckless things. And the captain says to him, you know, so I'm going to tell you this story about this Buddhist monk. And he's walking down this road and this guy on his horse, he's running towards him and he's coming towards him on this horse. And he looks like he's going to hit our guy. And our guy jumps out of the way at the last minute. He's like all dusty and he gets up and he screams at the guy on the horse. He's like, hey, where are you going? And the guy on the horse yells back, I don't know. Ask the horse. And it was funny because I told my wife this story out of the movie and she made this face. And Will Smith made the same face in the movie. And Captain Howard was like, yes, that face. That's the same face that I made when I first read this story. That horse is all of our fears and anxiety and all of the things that we let control us to the point where we can't even answer a simple question. Where are you going? Because you're letting those control you. And like he turned this thing that seemed like it was going to be funny into like a very touching moment. And Will Smith is just basically blown away. And they're leaving this basketball game. Like his daughter was at this game and they were playing. The captain's daughter was playing. And again, another callback. She shoots and bricks when she's shooting, and which is just like him out of the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he says, oh, she's got her father's genes. And again, if this isn't your movie or your like series, then you just, the joke is just lost on you. You're just like, ah, it's funny because she can't shoot, whatever. They're walking back to their cars and he goes, he's like, oh, you know, come over to the house for dinner, blah, blah, blah. And he's and like wife is going to cook. And he's like, you're going to let your wife cook. And then he's like, you're right. We'll order a pizza. And as they're saying that and they laugh, he gets shot in the neck by a sniper. And it was like, ha, ha, ha. And I was like, no. And he bleeds out in the middle of this basketball court where his daughter, or I'm sorry, the parking lot of the basketball court where his daughter was just playing basketball. And he's just bleeding. And the camera's moving up on his body as he's dying. And I'm just like, ah, that hurt.
He ain't going to be hurt. Bad Boys 4.
No, he's dead. And the next scene is his funeral.
Damn.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough. So
yeah, it makes 1917 sound like a happy movie.
Yeah. And if you guys don't have any other questions or anything else to say about it, like I'm ready to transition to that.
No, not really any other questions.
No.
I need to see these movies. I do like buddy cop movies a lot.
Yeah, I think that this would be right up here. Like almost every, I say almost every joke landed. I can't think of one that I didn't laugh at. And I think it seems like a lot of it.
I was going to say, I'm indifferent to buddy cop movies, but I believe when I watched them early on, it was because of my status as a teenage girl. And then I thought Martin Lawrence and Will Smith were dreamy. So I guess I need to like rechannel that and see how I feel about it, but I'll probably watch it. I'll catch it on TV.
Yeah, they are old men in this movie, and they play older men. So like they're both in their 50s at this point, and they play this movie like they are.
No, in that trailer, so. I thought wow, they really are old enough to be grandpas and not young grandpas. I'm old enough to be a young grandma, and I was young when I saw those two fucking movies. So if like yeah. I'm old, they're really fucking old. So yeah,
yep.
It's crazy that they're still doing shit. That sequel yep. is going to be them in their fucking 70s, just like Sylvester Stallone. And
I'm hoping not. I think that this movie is going to do well enough that they're going to fast track it. Because it has already set a record for January Thursday previews, it made about $6.4 million, and the studio was looking at a much lower number for what it was going to make. But again, based on this preview, it's killing everything in the box office now. So it's going to destroy Dr. Dolittle. And this is the best reviewed film of the franchise, and it's currently outperforming John Wick 3 and American Sniper at the box office. Wow. So
American Sniper was just huge because of its, I was working at the theater at the time. It never slowed down, at least in the Boulder, where you have a lot of people who just like film. Like, it was just was sold out for just weeks.
Wow. I don't think I've seen it all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces of it.
I liked it for some reason. I don't think I'd watch it again, but for some reason I liked that movie.
I like Bradley Cooper in it, like what I saw. But for whatever reason, I was just never interested in watching it all the way through. But anyway, all of that said, y'all folks ready to talk, instead of having me talk at you about Bad Boys, talk about 1917?
Yeah.
You have a brother in the 2nd Battalion.
Yes, sir. Is he alive?
And with your help, I'd like to keep it that way. But they're walking into a trap. Your orders are to deliver a message calling off tomorrow morning's attack. If you don't, we will lose 1,600 men, your brother among them.
There is only one way this war ends. Last man standing.
What the hell are you doing, Lance Corporal?
No! No! No!
If you fail, it will be a massacre.
Good luck.
All right. So 1917, I think, did it come out this weekend or last weekend for you guys?
Last weekend.
Don't know.
I saw it Wednesday. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So currently, 1917 is sitting at an 8.6 out of 10 on IMDb, and 89% on Rotten Tomatoes from the critics, and a 79% on Metacritic. It seemed to be doing pretty well. It's been nominated for 2 Oscars. I think one of them is Best Director, and I forgot what the other one is. It just jumped out of my head.
It's Best Picture, isn't it?
Is it Best Picture? Okay.
I think so. I think it's the front runner. At least they say that. I don't know what that actually means.
I don't know what that means. You would know better than me. If you don't know, I sure as fuck
I think
don't.
They usually figure that out based on how many it's won going into the Oscars, who the front runner is.
Okay.
It's very rarely the same at like the Golden Globes and the Oscars or whatever.
Yeah. And so this one's directed by Sam Mendes, and he's done a lot of other great things. So I think people are, to your point, they're really looking at him to probably do well at the Oscars because of it. And mostly a lot of it has to do with the technical achievement that this movie makes. So it's shot in a way where it is all one continuous shot. So it's a very interesting thing. What did you guys think about the movie? Whoever wants to go first.
I thought it reminded me of Mad Max Fury Road. I will explain that. Because it took things that should be ugly and disgusting and gave it an artistic quality. There's very little dialogue. The dialogue that is there is very simple. It's a quest film where you really want these people to get their mission done, with a whole bunch of gratuitous, gross, stylistic violence. But not so stylistic that it takes away from the urgency of what's happening. I actually just am not a fan of war movies in general because they expect you to feel a certain way, and it's almost like you have to come in with a certain baseline level of nationalism or patriotism to even get into it. But I personally don't have a point of reference, much less a negative point of reference to World War I. To be honest, I don't know a lot about it. So I went in very blank. I'm glad the two lead guys were two actors that I didn't recognize before, because then it made, when they had like the famous faces come out, like Andrew Scott and Colin Firth, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It was like that instant punch of like adrenaline, and then they go away, and then you're left with these
Cumberbatch.
Cumberbastard. I'll get to that part. But then we get to these two guys who, you know, I don't recognize them, and so I have to completely lean on their carrying, their acting, and they're carrying the film, which they did in a stellar manner. So I enjoyed that I came in with no expectations, and I walked out trying to figure out, like, okay, what did I think about it? And I was trying to compare it to anything I saw before. It was horrific, but I wouldn't call it a horror movie. It was thrilling, but I wouldn't call it a thriller. And the closest thing I could come to was, like, this was Mad Max Fury Road. It was just nonstop from the time you put your foot on the gas till the end of the movie.
Mm. Okay. Nick, so generally speaking, how do you feel about war movies, and then what did you think about this one?
Depending on the movie, I like them. It's not like I seek them out, but, like, you know, I'm a big fan of Saving Private Ryan. I was hoping War Horse would have been his World War I take on that, which it was not. It was, you know, the other story about a war horse. But I don't know. Like, we were just talking, I liked American Sniper. I love Hurt Locker. It's not, I wouldn't say it's any point of nationalism or pride, which is why I like World War. I mean, you know, war movies, they just, you know, they could be a nice dark way to see, I don't know, blood, and, you know, they're most of them, the good ones are cautionary tales, not celebrating it. Like even Hacksaw Ridge or something, I think, is one of the ones I remember seeing recently ish. But yeah, I really dug this one. I feel like this is the World War I equivalent of Saving Private Ryan as far as a defining movie for that particular war that, you know, captures the horrors of it, and, you know, has like the wide sweeping shots of battles. And yeah, it's just, I dug it most. Sometimes it felt like it was a video game I wish I was playing, because you're watching them walk so often, it feels like a walking cutscene. Mm. Like,
Call I did think of that too. Something. Especially when they would do these side quests where they'd meet like rando people. It did feel like a, this is where we get our flare gun. This is where we get our.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I dug it. I liked it a lot. I could definitely tell, I don't even know whoever did the score for Skyfall, but Sam Mendes is definitely stuck with the same guy because the scores were really close. But I guess that's my spoiler-free impressions, I guess.
Okay.
Oh, and obviously it also put every single British actor you'd expect. Like we said, Andrew Scott, Sexy Priest, which I watched Fleabag both seasons since I talked to you guys last. You know, Benedict Cumberbatch, Colin Firth, Mark Strong. You hear his voice and they wait to pan up to his face for a long time. I'm like, I know who that is. And yeah.
Well, whenever I see Mark Strong, I'm always like, fuck, is that Mark Strong or Stanley Tucci? So that was me.
They're very different people.
I can't tell them. I cannot tell them apart. I'm sorry. Call me racist. Call me what you want.
Mark Strong's the one who looks like he wants to murder you all the time.
Okay.
I love his voice.
He does. He was. And his... he was so sincere. I guess we're not in spoilers yet. So are we? No.
I'm going to do mine and then we can jump into it. So I liked this movie, and I think it's funny. I think that the audience scores, the Rotten Tomatoes scores for these are pretty accurate to mine. Like, I would give this a B+. Like, I enjoyed it. I will probably never watch it again. I walked out of Bad Boys and I was like on 10, just super excited. With this movie, I thought it was a more interesting version of Dunkirk. I thought that the technical trick that they did, the thing that they were trying to achieve, they did. I think there was only one break in the movie where it stopped being the one shot. I found so what you guys are referencing with the British actors popping up, I actually found that to be kind of distracting. Because at some point my brain started going, okay, who are we going to meet next? Who are we going to meet next? Who are we going to meet next? And I didn't like that. So I remember thinking that this movie did a good job of making me sad about the cycle of war. And, you know, like, this war just led into, like, everything that happened in this war is what led to World War II. And it just, the tensions that all of this stuff just continues to set up is just sad and frustrating. And so, yeah, I hated that. But I think I remember trying to remember I remember trying to figure out what I thought the message of this film was, and I couldn't come up with one. I'm curious what you guys would say to that when we get into spoilers. But as far as the movie goes, I think at the point where he started to cross the bridge after he left Mark Strong is where I started to lose interest in the movie. And then as we got to the end, is right where it picked up for me again, and I was into it again. So, yeah, I would recommend that you see it on the big screen just to see what they were able to do with this. I think it is a beautiful looking movie, and I think it sounds great. So I think it's one of those films where, you know, even if you have a good sound system at home, you're not quite getting it. So I would highly recommend seeing it in the theater if you haven't already. So with that, Tanya, you would like to talk spoilers.
Would you say you watch a lot of British TV in general?
Yes.
Are you saying that because I just asked you a question that put you on the spot about an opinion you just gave?
No, I'm saying that because I was kind of laughing in my head and smiling when I said it because I wanted to talk to you about Fleabag. And so it's funny that you asked me that question, and I have a note up here. It says Fleabag is amazing. I like it better than Marvelous Maisel. So I like binged that entire series based off of your recommendation, but generally speaking, yeah, I do watch a lot of British television.
So I asked that because as the movie went along, there were even people who I like, actually the guy who gave them the directives, I've seen him in Doctor Who and tons of other stuff. There were faces in the crowds who were people who I've seen in Sherlock. And so I don't know if it got to the point where I was like, oh yeah, this is a British movie. These are all faces I recognize, even if they don't have speaking parts. So by the time they got to like, oh, these are the big stars I like, but it didn't feel gratuitous because they were even the nobodies, not nobodies in terms of them and nobodies in terms of the movie and the plot. No, nobodies in the plot. Like they didn't have any words.
Oh,
it was just,
okay.
You know, random corpses or random guys sleeping wherever. They were still people whose faces I recognized. So that's why I didn't think too much about, oh, this is just star fucking. It was it's a British ass movie. So it's a British movie.
Simon
Pegg or someone would have taken me out of it.
What'd you say? What?
Simon Pegg.
Like, if you had Simon Pegg or someone, that would have taken me out of it. But
yeah,
you know,
I think
how Mike Myers was in Inglourious Basterds, and it was like, oh, who are you? What?
Yeah, very weird. But I think it was two things. So it wasn't just them meeting them. It's kind of what you guys said before about it being a quest movie. And it was every time they got to a next checkpoint, it was another big star. And that kind of took me out of the movie. That's what did it. It's those two things together.
Gotcha. My favorite of those, though, was I need to find more stuff to watch Andrew Scott in. What's he in? Like, I watched Fleabag, and I watched, like, the day I finished Fleabag, and I was like, oh, and he's in Sherlock, and he's in Spectre, one of the worst Bond movies, and he's like, he's in that Frankenstein movie with McAvoy, but, like, what else good things can I watch with him in it?
I actually didn't like his episode. I liked him in his Black Mirror episode, but I didn't care for the episode. Like, I didn't watch it again.
Yeah, same. Like, I like him on Black Mirror. Yeah, I liked his character in Black Mirror, but it's like, where can I watch more of him?
I bet he does all sorts of obscure shit that just stays on BBC that we never hear of. So I would start poking around his IMDb. I'm sure there's something there.
Yeah. Was it you, Tanya, that was talking about last week that no matter what they do in Hollywood, they still come back and do stuff on BBC? Did you say that?
I said that before, but I said that to Nick, I think, months ago.
Okay. Oh, maybe I was listening to one of y'all's episodes and I wasn't even there.
Was it the Come From Batch episode? Because I think that's where I said it.
You guys were talking about the best shows.
That's what
it was. Yeah, I wasn't even there for that. Yes, that was it's true, and I really like that. One of the other things that I liked about this movie was the symmetry. I loved that where the character that ended up surviving, he started and ended the movie in the same place. And I kind of like that. There was something about that, like I have a little bit of OCD, and I kind of, that satisfied it. where in the beginning he starts out by sitting by a tree when this mission starts, and then it ends with him sitting by a tree once he's completed his mission.
Completely different person.
Yeah. Yep. So I like that. You've ended up in the same spot, but yeah, like you said, it's not him.
Then you learn. Is there anything else at the very end? Like you see that he has kids and stuff because it's really cagey about that.
Yep. Tanya, is there anything else you wanted to add for spoilers before I go to Nick? Because I don't think you actually go into spoilers. You just asked me the question about the how much TV
I watched. I don't know if I was going to talk about. I don't remember what point I was going to make, but I wasn't sure if it would qualify as a spoiler. So I just wanted to be careful around the thing I was about to say, but now I don't remember what it was. So.
Okay. Nick Dahl, spoiler impressions of this film.
Okay. As much as this and Saving Private Ryan are supposed to be about the horrors of war, they both have this obsession with don't be nice to the enemy is the message.
Yeah.
Both the movies. Because someone's nice to the German and they get killed by the same fucking German.
Yep.
And I'm like, what are these movies all trying to say? Like, you think of the movie that was anti-war, it would be more of like, oh, yeah, like, they're not all bad guys. They're like you. But no, they rescue the guy out of the plane and he stabs the brother to death. And I think I do another thing similar where he tries to trust a German for a moment and then it tries to kill him or something. It. Him. But I'm dehumanizing the enemy already.
But it's funny you say it, but they made them relatively faceless.
Yeah.
And even the guys who showed their faces, you barely even saw it. Like, I think the guy who had the clearest face is the one whose hand he covered in that that dark room, kind of the guy he choked out.
Mm-hmm.
But I, like, if he was, you know, in a lineup, I wouldn't be able to point him out between other people. And I assume that was on purpose because they were always coming out of the shadows. They were this faceless enemy. I think that was supposed to highlight him being a soldier and carrying out this order where, you know what I mean? Like, he's just boots on the ground, but these people are barely people. I don't know. That was my take on it.
I remember thinking, watching that scene where he covered that kid's mouth, like, I think that's probably my fear of how to die. Like, if I had to think of ways I'm afraid of, it's like burning to death and being able to look someone in the eye, like, while they suffocate me to death. And you're just helpless to stop it. That just seems very bad. Maybe it's just like staring somebody in the eye while they kill you. You just have no, you can't do anything about it, because going back to Saving Private Ryan, I remember thinking that slow knife in the chest, while you're like, this guy is just staring you in the eyes. It's horrific. So I felt bad for that guy, even though he was faceless. And a lot of that had to do with me and my own fears.
Now, how about if you were on fire and you were getting and you were getting strangled and you were in outer space? Now you're talking my language.
With a nuke that just went off?
Yeah. The nuclear reactor on your spaceship just failed. Boom, we got
it going. You should write that movie. What would you call it?
We got a stew going.
Space stew.
Base stew?
Yeah. But it's interesting. The day I saw it, my mom sent me a recently found recording of my grandpa, who was a medic. He was actually part of the first special forces ever. In World War II, like, he was a skiing special forces and stuff, and like, it's just like a 2-hour recording he did in the 80s with another soldier where he's asking him questions. He's like, yes sir, and he's like talking about all his experiences, and I was like, oh my god, if this company doesn't own the rights to his story, like, this is like better than 1917. Like, it's crazy the things my grandpa was talking about, and he's never talking about it like in a heroic way. He's always like, yes sir, oh, we did this. And there's even one part where, which kind of reminded me of the film, and the film, he said he gave away the medal because, you know, it was just tin. And they actually make that cute joke about it's not just tin, it also has the cloth. But my grandpa, he says in the interview that some of the men turned down their accommodations, or whatever they would call them, after they served. Yeah, like after they... Because, you know, he was in multiple regiments. He got shot multiple times. He ended up with the 101st Infantry in the end. But and it turns out that he was the main guy who did that. He just didn't even say in the story because he was so, I don't know, not that guy. But it was interesting watching this movie. And obviously that was World War II, but watching this movie and then hearing a recording of my grandpa recounting serving in World War II. And it was like, it was a lot.
That sounds pretty interesting. Is that something you'd be willing to share?
Oh, yeah.
Not with BGRP. I want to hear it.
Yeah, I'll share with anyone who wants to listen to it. Absolutely. Okay. It was fascinating. I think it would make a great movie. Yeah, he was like the first Special Forces. They didn't even call him that yet, but like he was like picked. He was over there before Pearl Harbor because he was already volunteered and stuff. And like they taught them how to like ski. Like they were like a skiing. He hasn't talked about this story as much, but I've been told it by family because we wouldn't exist if the story had happened. Because they were this elite skiing troop who had all these different skills. They were going to have them drop them on a mountain and have them ski down and just blow up a German base without any plan of retrieving them.
Oh, wow.
It's just crazy shit like that. But I'm like, that would be an Oscar winning movie.
Yeah, I do. I would love to hear that. So yeah, please, when you get a chance, send that my way. I'll take a listen to it.
Yeah, if I forget, remind me. Because, yeah, it's okay. I'll send to anyone who wants to hear it. I found it fascinating. I think even people who's not related to my grandfather would find it interesting as far as a first-person account with not really any emotion interjected, just, like, facts.
Yeah.
He actually, one more thing. He actually treated a German officer, which is also why I thought about it. And he didn't get killed by a German. But they asked that question. I think the first time he even says no, and he's like, "No, there was a German officer." Like he was the medic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Anyway.
Well, the thing that sucks about that is that that's what you're supposed to do, right? Once somebody is a non-combatant, you are supposed to render aid. That sucks. That's kind of the message that comes from this, and yeah, that's unfortunate. That happened to him. I did not have any opinion when I walked into the movie. Did you guys think that he was going to make it all the way through? So the guy's brother.
I
was blown away at how much I wasn't expecting one of them to die. Like, why would you come into this thinking both of them were going to make it out? And it's probably just because I wasn't super tuned into the trailer. I didn't read a lot about it. I just heard one really solid review from a source I trust. And they said some things that made me intrigued. But I again, like I said, I mean, I went into it just totally blank and was surprised at my surprise that what the fuck did you think was going to happen? Yeah.
I agree. That same thing happened to me. I was like, I guess I wasn't watching that trailer close enough. Because usually my brain is keyed into that. Like, okay, at some point, I'm not going to see this person anymore.
And they show the one guy running through the field.
Yep. Yeah. That's the only scene that made me think that. But I didn't know where that would fall in the movie either until it was the ending.
Yeah.
So after he died, I was like, oh, yeah, because there's only one guy running in the main trailer shot.
The trench, yeah.
But even if you had asked me, like, okay, one of these guys is going to die, which one do you think it is? I would have said the other one because of brotherly, you know, oh, I need to get to my brother. And then the brother would be dead. like that kind of, you know what I mean? Like I wouldn't have predicted that, but I didn't think less of that earned emotional moment. I didn't think it was cheap. And it spoke to the character of that kid because after he gave the message to the general in my mind, like, oh, movie over, he finished his mission. I forgot about his brother.
Oh yeah. The brother.
he had a bigger mission. Like one that he appreciated.
There was a part of me that expected it to be him. I don't know why. That just would have seemed dumb, I guess. But like if they just played it like he was just, they made him look a little different.
You thought it would be him who died?
No.
They actually used the same actor?
Like, yes. Yep.
Yeah, I thought that might happen too. I was trying to see if I could recognize him amongst all the very British faces, which not as bad as Dunkirk where everyone looks identical, but it's still kind of... It's like, it's all these British faces.
For some reason, I thought it would be Benedict Cumberbatch. And then when it got to Rob Stark, I was like, no shit, he does look like that guy. Oh, yeah. They're the same shaped head and the same haircut.
That's the point you were putting off because you called him Benedict.
Bastard! Gave him
Yeah, that's what you were gonna talk about. Your spoilers.
Fuck that dude. Oh, but it, then again, it was, yeah, that's military. This dude did this thing that just almost killed him a million times until all the officers involved. Yeah, you did your fucking job. We told you to do a thing. Now you did it. The fuck out of my face. And then
it's
he
like
goes
Top Gun.
Yeah, and he goes and sits. I've never seen Top Gun. I fell asleep on that at age
7. No, the trailer. So,
oh, I haven't seen the trailer for that. But yeah, he goes, he sits under a tree, and now he's back to being a soldier again. He'll probably get his medal that he won't give a shit about. But his mission is done, and his life is basically going to go back to, yeah, I'm just a grunt in a war, and they'll probably give me something else shitty to do, and I'm just out here until they send me home or I die. And it, like, in that moment, you knew he did something important, but in the scheme of that war, even though it probably saved a lot of lives, I'm glad that one guy told him he did a good job. I'm glad at least one person said you did good, Lance.
After Benedict Cumberbatch told him to fuck off.
Fuck off! He literally told this kid to fuck off. I never wanted to punch him in his cheekbones as bad as I did. My mouth was open. I don't know. Why am I shocked by people being horrific in a war situation? But just like that guy telling him, I felt like a dad cussing out a kid who's abusive, and then the mom saying, "Don't worry about it, honey. You did a good job."
Yeah,
he's still exhausted. His limbs are still shaking. He hasn't eaten anything. He hasn't slept. He probably doesn't even know where he is. Did he blink? Did he blink the last 30 minutes of that fucking movie?
I don't remember. Certainly not during that trench run. I think during that trench run, they said that, like, him running in the people, like, at least one of those people that he ran into, he was not supposed to, and they just, like, left it in there. Like,
the
yep. That's,
he fell on, that it fell real on his neck.
Yeah. Holy shit. Like, we're keeping that. I'm curious what he would have done if other people hadn't been in that room. Because
Mark Strong's warning.
Yeah, Mark Strong was like, make sure you
witness this. That was some real shit.
Did he just know him, or did he know other officers? I'm curious about that.
He said some people just like the fight.
Well, he warned him specifically about him. So, I mean, I'm sure he at least knows his reputation.
Yeah.
You know, you hear about other officers and what they're up to during the war.
What would he?
He couldn't bash that officer to this private.
Yeah, he just wouldn't. Yeah.
Corporal or whatever. So, yeah, like, make sure you're not in the room with him by yourself. Because clearly he's unhinged.
Told you to fuck off in a room full of people. He probably would try to strangle him if he was by himself. I remember thinking, so there was one scene in this movie that jumped out to me, and it was probably when I tuned back into the movie because it reminded me of another movie. When he goes to this, after he gets out of the water, after leaving that village, so he falls down the waterfall and he goes to the soldiers that are sitting there singing, and the one guy is singing. It reminded me of Shawshank Redemption. And I don't know. Mm. And it's the scene where he's talking about, you know, I don't know what those pretty ladies were talking about. There was something about that scene that just, it seemed to take those soldiers away from the horrific thing that was going on. And that's why, and the way that they were sitting and listening to this guy sing reminded me of that scene out of Shawshank. And I thought that was a really beautiful scene and just stark. Just a stark contrast to what was going on.
It reminded me of Lord of the Rings for some reason. Pippin. The scene with the, yeah. But overall, I put that in with, they would make the little brief moments of this is what all this is for, like death and then life. Like the thing when he said about the trees, you cut the trees down, they come back even more because that, you know, whatever. Or the thing with the baby. You can't get a more literal representation of new life with a baby. And they let the baby live. They didn't do anything to the baby, which is nice.
They probably starved eventually.
Probably.
Is she someone?
The things they probably did to that woman. Jesus, like,
is she an actress? Yeah, is she known?
I didn't recognize
her. I did not recognize her.
I don't know I don't watch a lot of French stuff. So enough to really, like, be able to point people out quite like that. But, I thought they languished in the night scenes. They didn't go on too long, but they weren't so brief that they were trying to horrify you with, like, no, that's not what this is about. It was he got to be with that woman and that baby for a little while. They had the funny joke about the guy who had his ear eaten off. Like, there were these points of humanity in his, which I think it was a break for me, honestly, because my muscles were just locked up for most of the movie until something nice would happen. It would just be like, oh, okay, thank you. Yeah, oh. Yeah, baby.
Speaking of that scene, so this is one of the things I love going to the theater, but this is one thing that I hate about going to the theater. So when he was like, oh, I've got all this food, you can have all this food. And she was like, no, that's not going to do any good. The baby needs milk. And someone sitting behind, like a grown ass person sitting behind me was like, he has milk. Yeah, no fucking shit. We've all been watching the same movie. I'm aware that, shut the fuck up. I know he has milk. Shut
that's
up.
That's why, and it was, I only just go to Alamo Draft House.
Jesus Christ.
Replug.
Oh, well, they pull you the fuck out and tell you.
Oh, yeah. You're done.
Oh, they're only like... six other people in my theater yesterday, and I'm sure all of them were old and probably remembered 1917, so they didn't really have to hold it. You know what I was thinking? I was thinking of being in basic training and being told, don't put anything but water in your canteen, and that's what I was thinking when he put that milk down. Don't put that in your canteen. It'll make it rotten, which wasn't the point. Don't put tea in your canteen. Dies the inside.
So in terms of, have you guys been paying attention to award season, any of that stuff? Do you guys like award shows?
Despise the Oscars and always disagree, but yeah, I paid enough attention to know who's nominated for most of the stuff, at least
to
people.
Be angry. Okay. Yeah, enough to pay attention.
Yeah.
Okay.
I also hate the anger that you see. I don't know. It's annoying. It's like Star Wars. It's just annoying once a year.
I think
this person got snubbed.
Some of it is like, justified. Right,
yeah.
For like Parasite to be nominated. Like, so Tanya, I saw that you brought up this point. Do you want to talk about it?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
I have different views on what I consider a snub. I think that there are actors and actresses who gave excellent performances who were overlooked. I think being overlooked doesn't have malice, doesn't have any sort of intent behind it. I think sometimes that just happens. And I think, like, for example, I think Lupita Nyong'o and her performance in Us, I don't think that was hateful. I think that was just, okay. I think it was an overlook. I think the actors and actresses in Parasite got fucking snubbed. Because when you take a movie and you nominate it for Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Screenplay, but decide, oh, the actors... fuck them. They didn't do what they were supposed to do. It doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. Explain to me how you can have those three elements of a movie be worthy of acknowledgement, but the actors who fucking played that shit out and let you know the direction was good, let you know the screenplay was good, let you know the picture was good. And I wanted to actually get her name before we got on the show, because I figured we would at least touch on it. The girl who played Jessica, she's the one who I point out as she is the person who specifically was, I mean, absolutely the person who was the biggest loser in this situation as far as not having her achievement recognized. I'm recognizing you, girl, whose name I didn't bother to look up. I'm gonna look.
I think
it
it's Park So-Dam.
Yes! Yes, it is! Yep.
Oh. Well, at least your guys' favorite actress got nominated twice.
Who?
ScarJo. Got best lead and best supporting, I think.
I don't understand the obsession. I don't.
Apparently, Marriage Story was good. My sister liked it, but mostly for Adam Driver.
Yeah,
I don't want to watch. I'm going to.
I thought she was competent in Marriage Story, and I think because she's been so milquetoast up until this point, her being competent has become an achievement.
Maybe that's a strategy.
Good for her, because it's working. Because I doubt if she doesn't come away with both of them, she's going to get at least one. She's not getting snubbed.
So did you end up watching Parasite? So you did see Parasite. You
I saw Parasite twice. I saw Parasite and got mad, and then I showed it to my boyfriend and got madder. And I tweeted something about it. I tweeted something about it before I watched it, after I watched it, and after I watched it the second time. And then when we went to see 1917, it was re-released in my local theater, and I yelled about it on the street corner between Market and 23rd in Seattle. That was a fucking travesty that girl didn't get recognized.
So both of you saw Marriage Story?
Yes.
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, I saw it.
Okay.
It's streaming.
Who
I don't
saw
know.
Irishman?
No.
It is streaming, right? You did?
I think the ones that are nominated, I think I've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, 1917, and Joker.
Okay. So that was going to be my next question for you guys, because I know, so specifically on the show, we're currently reviewing that one now, and we've reviewed two episodes of Joker and Once Upon a Time. There's also Ford versus Ferrari, Parasite, Irishman, Little Women, Jojo Rabbit, and Marriage Story. And I'm curious, of those that you have seen, what do you think is most likely to win?
Wow, I thought I saw more of the Best Picture nominations. I guess I did not. So I don't
think I have an opinion. 1917, because of the subject matter more than anything else, I would say.
Why? Because of the subject matter?
Well, I mean, war movies are, it's usually a little family drama, probably about one of the characters being gay and coming out, or it's a historical picture. Those went like all the Oscars. Like, I remember, I thought Social Network got snubbed the year when King's Speech won, because it's like, when you look back, you're going to be like, Social Network was the important story that year. But they went for the historical drama.
Jojo Rabbit is about World War II. So which
that's
one?
True. And that I think that's too Russell. Funny for them.
Like, I heard it had a deeper message than the comedy on top.
Oh, no, no. I'm sure it did. But like that seems like it's too goofy for the... Like, they're going to be vote more conservative on that one. Joker's a comic book movie, and Scorsese's already told everyone how to vote on that one. not that...
Oh, wait. Maybe I did see more than the ones. You know what? Let me look at a list.
And then I think...
Do you want me to say it again?
I need to look at him.
Right. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I just think won't get it because, I don't know. It has the Tarantino prestige, but it's not necessarily a masterpiece. I don't know. There's a higher standard that comes with it.
Okay.
But I haven't seen the rest. Because one of the things I thought while watching 1917 was, finally, a fucking Oscar pick that's entertaining and good. Because, like, usually if a movie is nominated for an Oscar, I decide not to see it after the nomination. Because I'm I know this is going to be boring and dry as shit. Like, Marriage Story.
I think Parasite is.
Yeah.
I think it meets that criteria as well. I haven't seen Ford versus Ferrari. But I did like Parasite.
And that's the other one I want to see the most.
I'm trying to find a list that's just a list and not 40 paragraphs per movie on. I just need a list.
If you Google it on your phone, you'll get just like a, it'll be like a tiny snapshot.
Okay, I got one. Thank you, Variety. the movies I did not see were Ford v Ferrari, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit. I saw all the rest of them. No, I didn't see Little Women. Yeah. So I saw half. I guess I saw 5 out of the 9 that are nominated.
That's a lot.
Of the 5 I saw, I would honestly say, 1917 should get Best Picture, not because of the subject matter, just because of it, that whole Mad Max thing it reminded me of. But I think Parasite should get Best Director, absolutely.
That's interesting. I would have... Yeah, that's probably true. I like the... I think that what 1917 did well was like the sustained tension.
Yep.
And it only broke when the movie actually did break. And it ramped up and it stayed there for a while. And I remember thinking like there was a sustained note that I was hearing as I was watching the movie. And it's like, yeah, that's what this feels like. And I remember the first time I noticed it was when the plane was about to crash, like when the attack was going on in the dogfight and then the plane was coming towards them. And you could hear this thing in the background and it felt like just like one long note on a violin or something like that, just like building, like, ugh. And that's the way I felt for the majority of the movie. So,
or just the shots of him in the town when the town was being razed, they were gorgeous shots, but also like, what does he do? Because the only light he has to see by is this town that's on fire. And I will admit my bias, even though I enjoy movies that make me feel terrible, it's hard for me to like. Detroit was one of those movies where it was a stellar movie and I only watched it that one time because that was all I needed. I only watched Parasite the second time because I was showing it to somebody, but I felt awful at the end of that movie. And for, you know, it's supposed to make you think about income inequality and who the actual parasite was and this boy who has these dreams that might never come true. Like, it's supposed to make you think of these things, but it's still like when I went to bed and I was still talking about it and my dude had to tell me like, okay, it's time to go to bed. Like, you gotta stop now.
You know, it's funny. So you talk about that movie. The one thing that keeps jumping out to me about that movie that makes my jaw kind of tighten is the reaction that the guy who owned the house had, like every time that smell, like he thought he smelled something. And for some, like his reaction was so good and so believable to the whatever it was he thought he smelled. And so was the wife's, that I, like seeing that irritates me. It makes me angry.
It did. Especially when that bitch had her feet on the seat, like your fucking feet don't stink. And people want to be next to your... I hate when people take their shoes off and stick them on airplane seats and car seats and all this kind of stuff. And she's talking about he stinks with your funky ass feet out. So yeah, they were both in their own way disreputable people, which was, again, I love movies that are just super complex where there's no like really clear like good guy or bad guy, but that's life.
You know, it's funny. I saw people talking about this movie and somebody was like, I don't know who to root for. It's like... Why do you always need somebody to root for? Is it a good story? Is it a good movie? Is it shot? Well, just fucking watch it and enjoy it. It doesn't have to. It's this weird thing where people feel like they have to be in the movie and they have to be represented by someone in the movie in that way. Like, this is me and this is what I would do. No, just watch a story that's interesting.
Well, yeah. That's why I don't like war movies.
Well, I mean, it's even like Joker then in that way, where it's like, are you really rooting for Arthur Fleck? Because that's pretty fucked up.
Hey, I mean, people they are. Made him pretty sympathetic with all his health issues.
Then he starts, obviously, but he's not, I don't know, I wouldn't say I was ever rooting for him, especially since the movie's called Joker.
Yeah. I think that that's one of the problems that I did have with that movie.
The Joker?
Joker. Oh. Make that movie about him. So it pisses me off because Todd Phillips is like, well, you know, this movie has nothing to do with the success of Batman. Like the movie's success has nothing to do with Batman. Fuck off. And the fact that they called it Joker bothers me because they didn't go out of their way, but they made him too sympathetic. And I don't think that he's supposed to be a force of nature. And I don't think the things that he does, even in this movie, are in any shape or form justified by what he went through. That frustrated me watching the movie. So, I don't know. I didn't care for it. I thought it was well acted, but to say that he's not a Joker that I enjoyed.
No, I like to think of it as a separate entity.
I don't think I would have nominated Joker or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for Best Picture, but I would have nominated Joaquin Phoenix and Brad Pitt for Best Actors. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with that. I do not like Joker as a movie, but as a performance, yeah, I thought that was really good. But he's just some crazy dude in makeup to me. He's not like the Joker from the comic book to me. But
the movie. I thought it was a great movie. I just think every movie that I think is great, that doesn't mean it's best picture worthy. I think it should mean something. And I think the fact that this, which is why award season is so terrible for everybody. Who's actually really enjoying this except the people who get the awards? Because all we do is gripe about the people we like and shit doesn't happen. But I think just because it has so many decades of just bias and this person lobbied enough to get this award and this person is getting an award to basically say, I'm sorry, because we aren't giving you anything else, but take this for the Revenant, even though it really Revenant wasn't that great. Like, it just needs a colossal reset button. And I kind of thought, I don't know, what year was it? When Get Out won for something or Moonlight won for something, where those were movies that deserved the accolades they got and they got them. And some other nominee didn't get I'm sorry, you should have gotten this before award. I thought that was like, that's a good reset button. Now, you know, we can start on a good foot and start on a good playing field, but nope.
Of the stuff that I saw, I would want either Once Upon a Time or Parasite to win. I need to see Ford versus Ferrari. I would like to see it. I'm kind of surprised that it got nominated for Best Picture. Is it really that good? But I would like to see how that compares. Like it does not surprise me that Jojo Rabbit is there. I will eventually see it, but I want to see Ford versus Ferrari just to see like, really Best Picture.
Okay. Yeah. Everything else on this list of stuff that I didn't want to watch in the theater that I just figured out. Oh yeah. Not including The Irishman. I'm never going to watch The Irishman.
Yeah. Why not?
too fucking because long.
Well, not even that. I don't mind long. It's just I think it's amazing watching people, like when Stephen King made his comment, it's amazing watching people argue back and forth on against more diversity and for more diversity. And they hold up people like Martin Scorsese is almost like, what do you call it, immune to being part of these conversations. But how many fucking mob movies do you need?
Right.
How many voices, like how much more of a voice do they need? Which isn't to say I want him to retire or throw in a towel, which isn't to say that I love The Departed. I love his movies. But just the idea that like, oh, we don't need diverse voices. We don't need different stories. But what we need is another fucking mafia movie. That's what the fuck we need. Like, it's just ridiculous. So it didn't appeal to me because there's nothing in my mind. I can see superhero movies kind of going the same way. You have nothing new to say to me. I'll catch you when I can. But I'm not going to get excited about it. I'm not going to pay money for it.
Yeah, I come at it from a different point of view. So it wasn't the comments about Marvel. It was his comments about women, where he kind of just said that, you know, he only writes them when he has to, because otherwise they're a distraction, and that they really don't have a perspective on war. Like, they just perceive it in a weird and different kind of way. And that really bothered me. And I didn't really want to support anything of his in that way. Almost not for the same reason, but again, I think more diversity and more voices is a good thing. And to hear him basically say, like, well, we don't really need that, kind of pissed me off.
Well, and like, okay, so he's a typical Oscar voter. I mean, just, yeah, obviously he's one of the main voters. He's part of the Academy. He's never seen a Marvel movie, so he never watched the screener for Black Panther. He voted without even screening it. He says he's seen bits and pieces of Joker, and that's enough. So he's not even going to watch one of the ones nominated this year.
That he produced. So, like,
that's the whole Academy. No, he didn't end up producing it, and someone else did. He passed on it in the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought he produced it, too. I learned recently that he almost produced it.
Oh, see, I totally messed that up.
But even like,
still, it was such an homage to his work. That's weird that it did well. And
people
still
have their favorites and stuff, like genres, but they don't even sit down to watch them all.
Jeez.
Yeah. And it's hard for me to support his work when basically what he's saying is that someone like Kathryn Bigelow, who directed The Hurt Locker, doesn't deserve that Oscar. In so many words.
There, I read an article, and that was something else I was standing on the corner yelling about. In the history of the Oscars, only 5 women have been nominated for Best Director. And one of those women wasn't Penny Marshall. So you're saying that in the 92 years or however many years the Oscars have been going, only those 5 women were worthy of recognition? That's kind of unlikely, isn't it? Or maybe not enough of them blew Harvey Weinstein? Like, what are you saying? So it's kind of incredible to me that you have these people who, whenever you talk about, I think there should be more diversity, there should be more voices from people of color. We shouldn't relegate Parasite to only being eligible for the best foreign film. Women should, you know what I mean? And you have people say, well, you just want to nominate Soul Plane. It's so fucking insulting to have people assume that, no, we don't want Girl Ghostbusters to get a pass. We don't want Soul Plane to get a pass. And it implies that we can't make something like Parasite or Moonlight or something like that, something that is widely regarded. It basically is people clinching onto the status quo and not enough people in positions. And we're guilty of it, too. They're female people in power and people of color in power who get what they get from the status quo and they don't want to change. But there's not enough people championing for these new voices. And they kind of throw these people a cracker every now and again. Here's a cookie. But for the next 10 years, it's just going to be my movies and movies about making movies.
That's and movies with somebody with special needs.
Yeah.
I enjoy you standing on the corner. I think you're right. And it's just standing on a corner shouting these things, because I think you're absolutely right. And it's frustrating for Hollywood to, you know, say one thing and then at the side of their mouth they're not supporting the thing that they're saying. So
Anyway.
On that note, do you guys have anything else to say about the Oscars Bad Boys, or 1917?
Nah.
Nah.
Oh, hell nah.
I was going to say I'll watch it. Does he say "oh, hell no" in that movie?
He has to.
I don't remember if he does.
He does, doesn't he?
I don't remember. I really don't. I kid you not. Like, I was so into the movie that it was hard.
Smithisms didn't come out.
No.
Mm-mm. That was one of the main points of the Honest trailer was every single time him saying one of those two things.
Oh, God.
Oh, you know what? He does. And I think it's in the trailer, too. The scene where the young people start singing the Bad Boy song. And they're like, no, hell no. Mm-mm. Nope. Yeah, I think if they do say it, it is then. So I think he told them to get their own song. Man.
You can't have that much half and half. You just can't. Gotta cut it.
Dun, 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 dun. I really want to see this movie again.
Anyway. I have no more to yell about. I'm all yelled out.
All yelled out. Okay. Well, I think we can leave it there. So, folks, thanks. We appreciate you listening. What we'd like you to do, if you enjoyed what you heard, you know, do all the socials, like, rate, subscribe, hit us up on iTunes and all that, and we're on iTunes, we're on Google Play Music, we're on Spotify, we're on, you know, wherever you listen to podcasts, we're probably there, standing right behind you. That's what we are. Tanya, where can the good people find you?
If you would like to talk to me about how absolutely awesome Paxodam is, Paxodam, I'm here for you! You can reach me at tanya@lrmonline.com.
And Nick Dahl.
At @LRM_Nick on Twitter.
And you can find me right here on Breaking Geek Radio Podcast, as well as on Twitter @SirJonesyes. Folks, again, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on the next one. Hasta lasagna.
Okay, Nianya.
Woo! There we go. I was waiting. I knew. I love you, Nick. I love you.